Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
On today's podcast, my guest is comedian Dane Simpson. My name is Justin Hamilton, and you're entering the world of Big Squid. Hello and welcome to today's podcast with Dane, another comedian I've been trying to line up for Big Squid for quite a while, and we finally made it happen. So last week, Beck Charlwood, this week, Dane Simpson. Yes, it's a fun chat, so let's get straight to it, and I'll catch up with you at the end of the podcast. But now, here's Dane. All the way live from Newcastle. This is when you know you're on the road. You're going for a run in the morning, you've been doing comedy at night, and then you think, you know what I need to do? I need to set myself up in a hotel room that, looking at it, doesn't look like the type that you go for one final trip, Dane. It looks all right, actually.
It's shared bathrooms, to tell you the truth.
Oh, no. Maybe it is. You've done some touring now. There are the hotels that you stay at and you go, oh my God, I'm a comedian on tour. This is fantastic. And then there's other hotel rooms where you think someone came and spent the last hours of their life here.
I reckon they're one and the same. That's
really?
The same. Oh, it's when you go there and you go, I just spent $80 on this room.
Yeah.
I'm a touring comedian. Like that's... unless somebody's paying for it, then I am living at large.
But
until then, I'm in an $80 room in Newcastle.
That's all right. That'll do the job. All you're doing is having a snooze and, you know, you need somewhere to put your stuff.
Exactly what I believe in. I believe in that all you need is a shower and a good working air conditioner.
Yes.
You know, I'm really showing my Aboriginal heritage on that one. and a decent bed, and then I'm set to go. I've roamed around.
How was the gig last night?
I'm doing a gig tonight.
Oh, it's tonight. So you've gotten in early. Are you doing? So you know, Damien Callanan is one of the best comedians I've ever toured with. Who will get into a town. And like sometimes you know what roadshow is like. You'll only be in town for 20 minutes before the show starts. Yep. And he'll open with half an hour of local material that he's found in that small window. Are you doing a bit of research or do you know enough about Newcastle that you can drop some local?
I am doing my hour show tonight, which I wouldn't be able to really fit in the references, but I love comedians that do that. I'm absolutely blown away. I think Damien Callanan is one of the best. Bob Franklin is one of the best. There is so many of those really good comics that can go to a town. As you said, 20 minutes is all it takes them. A bit of a walk around town, and then they've got a rough idea of how to take the piss just enough to be a little bit silly and a little bit fun. But yeah, I certainly, I don't know. I don't really talk to a lot of people during my show.
Right, yeah. I'm a bit the same.
How greedy.
No. Well, I don't know. There's I think there's people who are really good at it, and yep. I can do it. But often, I just to be honest, I'm too empathetic with the front row because I know they're already panicking that yeah. they're sitting there. And you know, sometimes people are fine for a chat, but sometimes you can give someone a nervous breakdown by saying, "Hi, how are you tonight?" And you see them go, and it's what? All over.
Yes, exactly, and exactly what you're saying. Empathetic. With the front row, empathetic with the crowd. I think sometimes some comedians really forget that. Like they forget to put themselves in the point of view from the audience and understand what it's like, because that can be intimidating. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Especially when, you know, maybe it's their one night that they're going out for the next few months and he wears his special shirt that she bought for him 2 birthdays ago. And then the comedian walks out and says, "What the fuck is that?" And their night is ruined.
Nice shirt, dickhead. And then he's got to defend it because then he's like, "No, well, what happened is my wife bought it."
Yeah.
And then the wife is like, "I thought you said you liked it."
Yes.
And then... And 2 years becomes a divorce very, very quickly because of one comic looking for an easy laugh.
Yeah.
You
never want a marriage, a happily married couple, to break up over the fact that she thought he liked purple and he doesn't like purple and that's why he's wearing that shirt. So.
Yeah. How you doing, Grimace? Am I right, guys?
So your show in Newcastle, this is your award-winning show that you won a Fringe Award over in Perth, didn't you?
Won the Perth, won the Adelaide Award last year for best comedy show in the universe or something like that. I can't remember what specifics.
No, that's enough.
And also it's the special on Paramount Plus, which I'm very, very proud of.
Great.
So, So, we're doing Didgeridoozy is the name of it. And, doing it in Newcastle Fringe. Tonight, there was a few little places that we didn't get to last year. So, we're just knocking them off.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. And are you... So, which show is this? Like, how many shows have you written in the lead up to this in your career?
This is my second show.
Right, wow.
That I've written, yeah. That honk gives away that my $80 room is on the train tracks
It's right on the train tracks, yeah. give the driver a high five as he goes past.
This is true comedy living. Second show that I've ever written. Crazy. Yeah. What a crazy world we're living in. I've been involved in a lot of, you know, like... split bills with combined comedians in the lineup. But this is my second time ever going solo with an hour, which I really enjoyed doing. I wrote it on the plane to Adelaide. My wife was very angry about that because I was meant to be performing it 2 days later. And just really worked hard on it in 2 days. And then... went out and won the award. And when I rang my wife and went, I won the best comedy award for the week, she was not happy at all.
Because now here come some bad habits, right?
It was. No lessons have been learned.
Yeah.
you're an idiot. And I'm like, yeah. But, you know, that's me, baby. So.
Well, you know, like I once saw Fleety rewriting his show on the top steps of the Melbourne Town Hall, and he'd opened 3 nights previously. So I feel like you're still ahead of the game 2 nights before. But I think you're being possibly a little bit disingenuous, because I'm guessing that a lot of the ideas and routines and thoughts had been worked on in clubs and you'd been thinking about it. What you're saying is... putting it into a show, you did it in 2 days.
Yeah. So, you know, over the course of the year. You sort of, you work on gags, you write jokes and all that type of stuff. But yeah, figuring it out and putting it into the structure. Also, the show's called Didgeridoozy. I learned how to play the didgeridoo when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's just full of these yarns that I've picked up along the way. Ever since I was a kid, I always travel around. I find other people who play the didgeridoo. They've got pretty cool stories. And I just wanted to share all of those yarns. And yeah, it was really those 2 days was just figuring out the structure of like where this was going to go and how it would all fit together. As you would know, like an hour of comedy is crazy. Like that's a silly amount of time to be doing a show.
Yes.
Sitcoms don't even go for an hour these days.
Like they're 23 minutes.
They're 20 minutes. So and that involves what? Like 6 different characters minimum.
Yeah.
This is just one person, so it's a bit weird in today's world that we still do an hour, but yeah, there you go. Structuring that to keep people's attention span for shows that we normally would watch for 20 minutes, I think is an art form in itself. So
yeah. I always try to structure my stuff in 20-minute blocks because I kind of figure I probably start to lose their attention after 20. So I do something to change it up. And then at the 40-minute mark, I'm giving away a trade secret here, Dane, but around the 40-minute mark, I will say I'm going to finish up and to give the audience a sense that this is coming to an end, and then I do another 20 minutes.
You are bang on. I promise you, set your watch to it at the 45-minute mark.
Yeah.
People... look at their watches. They look at the time. They have a little sneaky checkout at their at their phone. How long have I been here for? Unless your show is absolutely insanely incredible and just like mesmerizing, I heavily believe in the 45-minute mark. People go, all right, I've had enough.
Reckon after COVID and being in lockdown, I reckon, look, I've done no scientific inquiry into this, Dane, so it's just a theory, but I reckon everyone's bladder control is less because nobody had to hold themselves before they went to the toilet. Like, you were at home, if you needed to do a wee, you did a wee. But that's why, you know, people said, did you go and see Dave Chappelle? I said, how long is he doing? And they said, roughly around 2.5 hours. I'm like, I'm out. I can't hold my bladder for that long.
I don't even think I've watched 2.5 hours continuously of the Chappelle Show. And I love the Chappelle Show. But I don't think that I've sat and just let it play through on Netflix or something. No way. That's a long time. Maybe I'd go and watch, but I'm certainly not sitting in the front row where he could see me get up to go pee and get some food and... hang, you know.
Well, the irony is I'll see a 3-hour movie, but there's lots of things going on in a movie. There's heaps of characters and there's heaps of things moving forward.
Yeah.
But just one person talking. I'm trapped with my own thoughts. I don't need to be trapped with someone else's thoughts for that long.
a little in secret too is I like to not watch movies at the theater. I love watching movies at the theater. I think that's incredible. But one of my favorite things to do is to watch them at home and we pause it and then just let my wife be savage because she's just got some things to say about characters.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because she's just such a... she will watch maths and just be brutal. We'll just say the most horrible. And then we'll... Yeah, so when she pauses a movie and she's just going to be savage on a character, like, one, get a haircut that costs more than $10, mate. Right. Two. Like, wow. It starts off brutal, and then it just gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
Better
to pause and let her have a crack so then you can get back to the story as well, rather than doing it over the top.
I want to hear it. Sure. What kind of misogynistic bullshit is this guy up to where he thinks, blah, 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 and I'm like, oh, great. And then why is he encouraged by this person? And I'm like, oh, yeah, get it out. And then we're back into the movie, and then he'll say like a little extra on top of what he's... And then she's back, paused again, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be even worse.
Yes. Has she ever been won over? Has she ever been savage on a character and at the end said, oh, you know what? He came good.
You know who it is? Van Damme. Van Damme wins her over every time.
Really?
And I promise you, it's because there's always a scene with him bare butt.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason,
Who knows why?
No scientific things have gone on, yeah. but it just seems as though she gets won over.
Yeah.
After that scene, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. She's just like, "Fuck this guy! I hate everything about him." Bare butt. Yeah. He's all right. He's okay.
Why is his hair always wet? That's weird. What a gross character. You know what? Not that bad. Not that bad.
Not that bad. That is a good question, though. Why is his hair always wet? Stop using 80s gel, mate. Hey, we've got quite a few people listen to this podcast overseas, and they might not know what a didgeridoo is. Do you mind explaining to our overseas listeners what this instrument is and how you learnt to play it and what it means culturally?
Yeah, 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 cool. So didgeridoo is an Aboriginal instrument. The traditional people of Australia, the First Nations. It is a long tube. It's wood. So, and how it would be made. So it's a branch on a tree. And white ants, Australia's version of termites, I would say, eat out all the soft wood on the inside. So they eat all the marrow of the branch, if you will. And then you cut down that branch, shave down the bark. Traditionally, we would soak it in the water for about a week, which would act as a wood treatment so it doesn't dry out, split and crack. But today, obviously, just using a wood treatment. And then what traditionally you put down some hot coals down the inside because that just burns out all of the dead wood and twigs and whatever that's in there. And it seals the wood on the inside. And then you're left with this like a tube, should I say, of a branch. And then you put some beeswax on the top, which creates a mouthpiece. You would paint it. And the reason why you'd paint it is that you're trying to paint who owns the didgeridoo. You're painting your name. Aboriginal people didn't have alphabet or hieroglyphics. So we painted symbols that would represent us. In today's world, maybe like a version of putting your favorite football team, putting maybe your dog or your pet or whatever you have onto the didgeridoo, maybe putting symbols about where you live. It's these symbols that people could see and go, oh, I know whose didgeridoo that is because they live there and that's their thing that they like and that's their pet that they have. And yeah. And then you play it. So you play it and it sounds, it's got a droning sound. You play it by vibrating your lip like that into the didgeridoo and then it just comes out with a deep drone.
You have to, you're it's like a lot of wood instruments, like you're breathing and blowing at the same time, and it's phenomenal to watch up close because it's like I can barely do one of those things at a time. You know?
Yeah, well, it acts similar to like how the bagpipes in Scotland work. Mm. So you're filling up the bag with air and then you squeeze it with your armpit with the bagpipes. So with a didgeridoo, and for anybody that is still wondering what it sounds like and stuff, I encourage you to like Google it and try and find some people playing it. But it is filling up your cheeks with air and then pushing that out and then breathing back into your nose. So it is a continuous drone of the didgeridoo, and then using your throat you can make some sounds come out of it. So yeah, it's pretty cool, but I find it to be more is it mesmerizing would be a good term. If I see a really good didgeridoo player, I will sit and watch for 2.5 hours. Well,
while thinking that, God, I wish I could press pause on this. I need to go to the toilet.
I need my wife to be savage.
Give you a little break. A band for people overseas, a band like Yothu Yindi use the didgeridoo beautifully in rock music as well. That's such an extraordinary and underrated Australian band, and
absolutely
a great way to hear how it can be used in I was going to say contemporary. They've been around for a while now, but that is such a brilliant sound and unique as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Mixing that traditional sort of music with a contemporary rock beat and sound. Yeah, awesome. So awesome.
Yeah. Whereabouts in Australia are you originally from?
So my mob is from Walgett, which is outback New South Wales. So we're talking northwest New South Wales. Walgett is the little town that's there, 2,300 population. The mob there is called Gamilaroi. And that stretches over to Tamworth, which is like a pretty big sort of place. But I live in Wiradjuri country, which is Wagga Wagga.
Right.
Which is more like country New South Wales. So, but for the people who sort of know that area of Walgett, it's near Lightning Ridge, which is where we get our opals from over right. this side.
Yeah. Right. The I remember a New Zealand comedian, this was many years ago, was over here in Australia and was talking about how there's a lot of Maori names underneath anglicised names for streets and things like that. And yep. he was saying to me, you know, you should do that with the Aboriginal culture as well. And I was like, I think that's a great idea, but people don't realise that there is a broad dialect and
yes.
different languages. And it would, like, street signs would be massive, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. And like what 200 and over 260 different language groups across the country.
Yeah.
So and like yeah, it's a contemporary traditional Australia is a lot like contemporary Europe. So there's even though we've got the continent, there would be over 260 different groups based in there. Italy, France, Germany, all these different little countries and stuff. So similar to that, we would have Aboriginal people, so saying to speak Aboriginal or to have the Aboriginal language is a lot like saying, "Oh, do you speak European?"
Yes,
it's
sure.
Yeah, I speak European. Yeah.
Someone speaks bon to sure. someone in French. Yeah,
pizza.
Bonjour pizza. Yeah, exactly. yeah, I don't think people overseas realize that aspect of it as well. That there's such a broad range within yeah. that community.
And everyone looks different as well. So you've got your there's obviously what people think that an Aboriginal person would look like traditionally, but that is really taken from the Bushmen. That's really taken from like that South Australian Northern Territory vibe. So those types of groups tend to always get their pictures where because they look that what people would say traditionally Australian, but. Yeah, it's a lot like you can tell an Italian person, a traditional Italian person, you could look at them and go, oh, yeah, you're Italian.
Yeah.
You've got, and you can tell the difference between somebody from Italy and somebody from Germany. And they're not that far apart, you right. know. And somebody from Switzerland and somebody who's French, there's different characteristics of them. So you can really tell different Aboriginal people, and some of them aren't overly dark skin. Some of them aren't exposed to being out in the desert area. Some are just in bushland, which is a lot of my dad's people. So they traditionally weren't dark originally, but yeah.
Well, it's funny because we just did a run at the Comedy Store together and you were telling a routine about going and performing in India and having a hostess talk to you and you're like, I am not Indian.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is, but I look Indian. And I find this funny too because when I was in India,
yeah.
I'm walking around and I'm like, you could be my cousin.
Yeah.
You could be my cousin. Like there just seems to be this direct Indian link between us because we just look very, very similar, my people and Indian people. So, and it's been crazy because we tease each other all the time when I was growing up. We're like, if somebody did something that's just not Aboriginal enough, you know, like somebody can't fish if they're not good at fishing.
Yeah.
We just go, oh, it's all right. He's Indian, bruh. So it's fine.
It's all right. Don't worry about
it. It's all right. He's Indian, yeah. bro. It's okay. He doesn't know how to fish. So we do stuff like that where we're just being silly. But yeah, growing up and then going to India turns out to be true.
It's yeah. It's so funny. What a funny situation to be in, just going, I don't know what you're talking about. I cannot help in this situation.
Yeah, just so many Indian people coming up to me, specifically because I'm walking around with white people.
Yeah.
And just going, what's going on?
Yeah.
Why are you with these white people? Like, what's going on? This is crazy. And then I don't know what they're saying. So I'm like, nah, I don't know what they're... What, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're saying. And they can hear my accent, and then that confuses them
right.
even more.
Where's he from?
What's this? This Indian guy speaks weird.
Yeah, is this a small suburb of New Delhi that I don't know about? Like, what is happening here? Something you said earlier that I thought was interesting was, you know, your later show, you had lots of yarns from people that you've met over the years, etc.
Yeah.
And, I think a very serious and important topic is appropriation, where, you know, you shouldn't really be telling other people's stories, etc. A lot of that stuff is directed towards, Caucasian people taking on mannerisms or haircuts and stuff like that. But I was wondering, because there's so many different tribes, are there any stories that you, as an Aboriginal man, are allowed to tell? And there's some that some people in other tribes would be like, that's not for you?
Ooh, that's a good one. Appropriation of different clan groups, countries, groups, tribes is very important. What I try to do is I try to make the show vague and try to say at the top of the show, I always talk about how these stories are going to come from all across the country. They're certainly not law, so please don't sort of learn anything from the show, because if you learn something from the show, then you're going away going, Dane told me, and you're like, no, these are just yarns, these are just stories. And I do like to clarify, it is Wikipedia in real life, so don't write your exam from this.
No quotes.
This is just people putting in their little bits and pieces. That's important for me to clarify at the top of the show. But also, there's a few little bits and pieces with Aboriginal culture. It's not for me to realistically be talking about women's business.
Right.
So, there is certain aspects of my culture that I still do abide by. I still have a lot of respect for. Obviously, like I'm very proud of where I come from, and I'm deep in the game. I grew up like mad black fella. My dad took me out. Took both me and my brother out and taught us a lot about our traditional people, the Gamilaroi people. We speak little bits and pieces of words. So we're really in touch with our culturally, a contemporary version of our culture. And women's business is a really strong identifier of that. It's realistically about when you are becoming a man. So when you are in that sort of vulnerable bit of your life, when you are a teenager and you sort of that transition from being a boy into a man, Aboriginal people did have like traditionally a very almost like a black and white area of that. So as a young man, you would learn these traditional dances, you would learn these traditional songs, you would climb up to like a high ground area in Wagga Wagga. There's a place called The Rock, which you know, great name.
Yeah.
thinking outside of the square.
Yeah, no piss fighting about. It's The Rock. That's what it is.
It's The Rock. Yeah. I think, yeah, I it's called Dwayne Johnson now.
Right.
They've changed. But it's the really high ground, and it traditionally that's where you'd go. And I don't know if people would know, like a bull roarer. So a bull roarer is used in Crocodile Dundee, and I think he says, "I've got to go make a telephone call." And so what he does is it's a maybe like a oblong shaped piece of wood on the end of a string, and he twirls it around. And it makes like a whoa, 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 whoa sound. And that would be used to go up on top of the rock, make the telephone call, if you will. And that's just letting because that sound travels.
Right.
And that's letting those young boys make their way to the rock, climb up. And now's the time to do your traditional dances.
Yeah.
And so these dances are sort of there to help you understand what's going on, the changes, the respect that's expected of you from now on, becoming an adult. There's bank accounts you need to sign. There's the licenses that you need to get. You need to move out of home. It's it's these types of things, you know.
Yeah.
And there is a women's equivalent to
right.
that, which would take place down at the river, and they do have their own songs. They do have their own instruments and things like that. So and talking about the didgeridoo in that context, the didgeridoo is more of a man's instrument.
Right,
because it's used in these types of ceremonies.
Okay,
for some cultures, for some of the clans, so they don't let women play the didgeridoo because it's used in these special ceremonies to help these young boys become men.
Yeah,
So it's in that adolescent sort of area. So there is some things about the didgeridoo about women aren't allowed to play it traditionally and that type of stuff. And I do try and cover some of that in the show just to give people a bit of an idea as to how that would work. Because there's certainly no misogynisticness involved in that. It is, we're talking like 60,000 years ago where they're just trying to define or trying to help young adolescents become adults.
Yeah. Do you find as a modern guy there's tradition and then there is the way we look at the world now, and you want to respect tradition, but then there's things that you would, as a guy who has traveled the world and had all these different experiences, at times might.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Find a little bit confronting, or you might find a little bit difficult to reconcile. How do you balance that? Because I'm a white Australian. Like, my tradition is the village people doing YMCA, so I don't really have anything. So I'm curious about these things.
I find people who can figure it out to be a lot better. Because you could just keep going around and around in a circle on this. It is actually misogynistic. Oh, well, it is a traditional culture and we should respect that. And where does that sort of end? But what my personal belief is the Candyman check, right, is what I call it. I don't say that in the mirror 5 times.
Right.
I am scared and I know it's not real, but it's just inviting bad juju to your life.
Yep.
You know? So that's what I determine what I'm going to do. So if I go to different cultures and stuff, and they say, please don't touch people on the head.
Yes.
I go, cool, I'm not going to do that, because that checks with the Candyman check.
Yep.
So
the Candyman check is perfect.
It might not do anything, but it certainly might cause me bad juju. So I don't want that. I don't want to invite that into my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just you can continuously having fun if you live by this rule.
I was always frustrated as a kid because the bits of Aboriginal mythology that I got to have contact with was fascinating, and it was actually fun. It was difficult to find when I was a kid. And, you know, just the idea of the rainbow serpent and singing the world into existence and all of that was mesmerizing to me. And I wish that was something that was, like I don't have kids, so maybe it is, but I wish, is that something that you would like to see taught more at school so people could have because I think it gives you a more of an emotional understanding of a culture rather than... which is more, in some ways more important than historical, because I think you can relate emotionally.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe in that. It's weird for me because I grew up with these stories. Yeah. So I had the yarns. I know them. And obviously the stories are different. So the religion, if you will, of the dreaming is different depending on what country you come from. So you're going to have different beliefs in how... the world was made. A good example of that is in Queensland, my mum's people and I was hearing like vague yarns, but they were talking about the bird, the Willy Wagtail, and the Willy Wagtail was a warrior and would jump from side to side and dodge spears coming at him, and was quite a strong man who could enforce the laws. And so was rewarded when he passed on, was rewarded, and they turned him into the Willy Wagtail. And if you see the Willy Wagtail today, it's giving you strength. It's giving you courage. You can be the, if you got something going on in your life where you need a little bit of, I need to know that there's something out there that's with me when I do this, I need a little bit of courage, and you see the Willy Wagtail, then that's inspiring. And that helps you, do whatever you need to do. But in my dad's people, or in Wiradjuri culture where I'm living, they say that the Willy Wagtail is a young boy who didn't learn the dances when he was an adolescent, and didn't learn these stories and the traditional way of painting. So when it came time to become a man, and they were like, all right, put the paint on your body, and he just grabbed the paint and splashed it up his front.
Right.
And they were like, oh, now do the dances. And he just jumped from side to side being silly.
Right.
Because he didn't learn them. And then when the spirits came to show, when they're meant to show strength and they've got these dances and they've got their body paint on, they are to become a man, and the spirits are coming at them, but they've got no fear. They're strong. But this young boy fell back into the fire. And then coming out of the fire was a Willy Wagtail.
Right.
Jumping around with his belly that's white. And that's to serve as a warning. So if you see a Willy Wagtail, then that means that you're being a bit silly and you need to wake up to yourself, and do your duties. Be a man, sort of.
Yeah.
Thing, or be an adult, be strong.
I love Willy Wagtails. I'm going to take both those stories on. I'm going to look at it and go, I'm feeling good about myself, but I'm probably being a bit of a dickhead, so I'll get on top of it.
and so, yeah, depending on where you come from, you're going to have conflicting views of that.
Yeah.
And that's only one aspect, you know. So different animals represent different things to different people. And that's what I mean by the show. So when I'm traveling around, I'm hearing these stories, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true for somebody in a different area.
Yeah. Does the show kind of have an aspect of it that changes? Because if you pick up a new story on your travels while you're touring, and then you can kind of go, well, you know what? I think this kind of represents where I am now. I can move this one aside, or I can combine it with another one you already have.
Yeah. There was one time where the show was going for an hour, 15 minutes, because I was just adding too many stories.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and just cutting it down. So there is bits and pieces that I chop and change.
Yeah.
And the Paramount Plus is a version of it, from back then, from when we recorded it. But certainly I've chopped and changed. I could probably almost do a didgeridoozy part two.
Oh, yeah.
And just have all the bee stories.
Yeah. Didgeridoozier.
Did you electric didgeridoos?
Boogaloo 2. That's great. Yeah. I think they're the best shows in a way, the ones that are malleable and can, you know, new information can come in and then you can add something and then you can take a bit over here and it keeps growing and it means it's a living entity.
Absolutely. And you just it sparks a new yarn, a new little thing for you, and it keeps the show fun for the performer as well.
Yeah.
And I think other people tend to come and watch the show, you know, like they've seen it a few times. I think my brother's watched it maybe 3 times.
Wow.
And he's just like, yeah, no, I really like this, or you've this story's new. I really like that story. So I think people will continuously come to the show and still enjoy it. So that's pretty cool as well.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, that's exciting. Well, you are a storyteller, and when we last caught up, we were having a fun chat, and you told me something about two movie franchises that I had not heard this theory before, and it's because I don't watch either of them. One, I was a bit too old for when it came out. You know, like, that when you're in your young 20s, I think you don't watch kids' stuff because you're a grown up, but when you hit, you know, once you kind of hit 35, you can kind of watch kids stuff and enjoy it because you're far enough removed that you're, oh yeah, I can watch this and it's not reflecting on me. But when you're early 20s and you're at a kids thing, it's like, what am I doing here? You know?
Yeah.
But, and the other one is a franchise. I'm a bit of a scaredy cat and I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to horror, but, I'm sure some people have heard about this, but I hadn't heard about it before. Do you want to tell me about this crazy movie theory that you were telling me about that includes Home Alone and the Saw movies?
And the Saw movies. So, and I think, because I'm fascinated by these crossovers and these theories that people have.
Yeah.
I think that they're really interesting when you start to really delve into it, when you're really looking at it from its face value. It's a bit silly and it's a bit fun where you're like, oh, okay. But when you delve into the reasons why these people have come up with these ideas, you start to go, oh, this is starting to make a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
One of the really good ones before we get into it is the TV classics, Flintstones, and the Jetsons.
Right.
So the theory is that they're both set at the same time. They're not in different periods of life. They're actually set at the exact same time. And it's a more about the haves and the have nots.
Oh.
So the Jetsons are above the clouds and the Flintstones are on the ground.
Oh, my Lord. That is brutal.
And what really brings it together is that there's a little green Martian that appears in both TV shows. It's the same guy and he's the same age.
Right.
So, and that's what tied it together. But it's these types of things where you're like, oh, that's silly and that's fun to think of. But when you really delve into that world, you're like, oh, yeah, this really makes sense. There's reasons why that, the Fred Flintstone has to use these dinosaurs as telephones and whatnot, and the Jetsons get to cruise around in these, like, space mobiles.
Mate, it's really, that theory really turns me on the Jetsons. It's like, fucking rich people.
It really does, doesn't it? It's so crazy. I really love these theories. And so, the one of my favorites is the Home Alone franchise, and is just a prequel to the Saw movies. So the story is Kevin McAllister, there is a lot of spoilers, but if you haven't watched these movies,
mate, it's been decades, come on people.
Has been left at home, and then sets up these little traps for the bad guys that are breaking into his house. Then these bad guys, there is multiple theories, but one of the stories is that the sticky bandits or the wet bandits get out of prison, and Kevin McAllister is fearing for his life, so he goes into witness protection, and they move him across the country and they put him, they change his name to John Kramer. Is that his name? Kramer?
Yep.
Kramer. And he lives his life. He's got his wife and whatever. But then he gets crook. So in the Saw franchises, and then that sort of takes over from there. So he gets sick, snaps, his brain goes back to when he was a kid, and he starts setting up these traps again for the people that he finds villainous or these bad guys. And he's, and then that's where the Saw franchise kicks in. So it's the same kid all growing up, setting these traps and capturing the bad guys yet again. But his brain's a little bit sort of, snapped because of this illness. What's he get? I think he gets cancer.
Right.
Or whatever it is. And then there's so many people that are keep chiming in on this theory because he's so scared of the furnace in Home Alone 2.
Right.
And then for some reason somebody burns to death in a furnace in,
right,
I think, Saw 2. So it's, there's so many links that you can make. But again, it's fun to sort of think that these movies are connected. And I'm pretty sure one of the Saw creators was like, that's canon. Like, that's...
that's great.
I'm pretty sure, like, the Home Alone franchise is like, no, of course not. That's silly. But the Saw guy's like, definitely that happened.
Yep, we're making this part of it. It's so funny to think that Kevin McAllister snaps and just starts taking out dudes in elaborate traps later. That's a little bit like the reverse theory of in Breaking Bad, Walt actually lives at the end and gets put into witness protection and ends up in Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, 100%. Like, I love that. That's one of my favorites.
It's so entertaining. I looked up some more for you and to see if you knew of these and what you think. Like let's say you're buying into the Kevin Home Alone Saw thing. You're all in on a scale of 1 to 10. You're bang at the top.
I reckon I'll be 10. I love the idea of it, and it's almost mimicked real life. Like, thank God that what's his name?
Macaulay Culkin,
Has bounced back and he's doing very well at the moment. But there was a few years there where he was not doing too well. And I'm like, oh, that looks like the Saw franchise dude. Like, he is.
Now that he's better, maybe he can appear. Like, maybe there needs to be a Saw film where there's a Jigsaw copycat murderer. And then it turns out to be Kevin McAllister. It's... People love to cross IP now, you know. They love to have you know Freddy Krueger and Halloween and that. So that feels good. I've got some others here for you. So we'll rate them what you believe in them. So if Saw is number 10, you give me a rating where you want to buy into this.
Okay.
So the movie The Rock with Nicolas Cage, Sean Connery, Ned Harris, and James Bond, Diamonds Are Forever, and the theory is, James Bond gets captured by the US government, MI6 abandons him, he rots in prison for a few decades, then saves the world from a chemical attack with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. Two movies that I absolutely love.
Yeah.
And they can be put together. They seek him out specifically because he knows how to break into Alcatraz undetected.
Yeah.
So it's and they never mention his name. I think they leave his name out.
That's the thing, right? That's the thing. So
And all he cares about is his daughter. So that's the only untiable little knot or little thread there. I think he wants his daughter to have money in The Rock.
Yep.
I can't think of it, but you know what? I'm going to buy in, but not at 10, only because of that thread.
Yeah.
So I'm going to buy in at about 7.
7. All right. Check this one out, Dane. I was really excited when I found this one to tell you. Fight Club is a sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
What?
Yeah. So this is the theory. Ed Norton's character is Cameron as an adult, and Ferris Bueller was his first delusion.
You know, because that makes sense. I've heard the theory that Ferris Bueller is the is the first is the delusion before.
Yeah.
But not linking it to Fight Club. That's really funny.
Yeah, I'd heard the Ferris Bueller delusion before as well, and but linking it to Fight Club is really enjoyable, and it also, like, you can imagine both of those actors. Yeah, when he was that age, of course he wants to be Matthew Broderick, and of course when he gets older, he wants to be Brad Pitt. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and there's so many little nuances that are in that movie where, like, apparently Cameron wears a jumper supporting a football team, and they don't live. They're in New York City, I think.
Oh, right. Yep.
But it's not a New York team. It's actually a team from a different state. So these little nuances about, like, where his origins and what he feels inside are shown through these tiny little things throughout that movie.
Right.
And, you know, it's really just a fun, silly teenage movie. But when you start to put in this little bit of emotion and where this guy's really scared of his parent, like, he's really worried about his dad, and he's wearing these clothes that really are sort of screaming, like, help me, I just want to go and live somewhere else.
Yeah,
you start to, it gets heavy.
Yeah, it really does. It's like, you know, like, I'm a big believer in trying to watch a movie representative of when it was released, because it's easy to then shit on films as you get older because things change. Right, but watching Ferris Bueller's Day Off again, you go, oh man, Cameron, like, Jesus, this Ferris is an arsehole.
Yeah, purely. And, like, yeah, at the when I'm first watching it as a teenager, I'm like, oh, come on, Eeyore. Like, just liven up.
Get with it, mate. Have a good time.
But, you start to realize that this guy's got some real world problems.
Yeah.
And his friend does not care.
Yeah, what a shithead.
All he cares about is women.
Yeah.
And
having a good time.
Having
a
good time.
Yeah. So where do you rank this on the Saw list?
Or I reckon it's going to go below The Rock. I think there's a few threads that we've got to change. There's name changing.
Yeah.
And there's a whole delve into the dark side.
Yeah. That you're not ready to do with Ferris Bueller just yet.
So I'm going to buy into it, though, because I like the idea, and it does make some sense. So I'm going to say 6.
Okay, that's good. Also, a little fact for people listening if they didn't know it, Ferris Bueller has an end of credit scene, if you stay right to the end, where Ferris comes out brushing his teeth and he's a bit like, what are you doing? Sitting around, go away. And that was the inspiration for the first after credit scene in Iron Man. So you know when you're busting to go to the toilet after you've sat through a 2.5 hour Marvel film and you have to wait another 27 minutes to see some shit CGI thing come up at the end that makes you go, oh, there's a character I've never heard of. Ferris Bueller is to be blamed again.
I love that Deadpool just literally does the exact scene. It's so funny.
It's really funny. Deadpool's great. All right, I've got a sci-fi one for you. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and War of the Worlds. And the theory is, suppose at the end of War of the Worlds, when the machines start falling over, a cockpit opens and sitting in the driver's seat is an E.T. alien. You find out at the very end that you've actually been watching a sequel to what you thought was heartwarming children's movie, but actually is about little boy sneaking an alien scout off Earth that ultimately leads to the invasion, and there ends Spielberg's alien invasion movie series.
Brilliant. I love that they've even added the scene in for you. This is... So there is a direct link between E.T. and Star Wars.
Yes.
There is the Yoda, somebody dressed as Yoda in the Halloween scene in E.T. And E.T. puts his hand out and is like, hey, as in, like, I know that guy.
Yeah.
And then there is also E.T. aliens in the Star Wars franchise when they go to the galactic ministerial, or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Oh, the best bit of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
E.T.
There's like 4 E.T.s and you're like, yay!
Yeah. Star Wars has a little connection to Raiders of the Lost Ark, where you go into the pyramid and you can see the little, in one of the bricks, you can see hieroglyphics of C3 and R2.
Yeah. So no, we're linking three movies here.
I like it. I like that franchise. A lot. Do you buy into that one? Where do you rate that one?
I'm not buying into it only because they're just making it up.
yes.
And I'm just loving the idea of, like, you know, let's just say that it opens up and then they're there.
Yeah.
I like the idea of it, though. So I'm going to say 4.
Yeah.
Because I like it, but there's no actual evidence in the movie yet.
Yeah. And I love E.T. and I don't want to think that he is actually coming down to work out how he can take us over. So I'm with you on that one. I'll give you one more, and this is insane, right? So, but it made me laugh. Titanic, Inception, and Shutter Island. So the theory is Titanic, Leonardo DiCaprio ends up lost at sea, but you never see him die. 2, Inception, the movie starts with Leo being washed up onto a beach and ends with him wondering whether he is crazy or not, or whether he is imagining reality. 3, Shutter Island, he starts in a mental institution and it's about whether what he sees is real or whether he is just crazy.
I love that. And he's just a vampire that's lived for hundreds of years.
Or he's got a really imaginative, crazy world. Like, he's not only... Because he's, you know, the Titanic's, what, 1918 or something way back then. So if he's flipping out and seeing these things, it's like, wow, man, you've really imagined the future quite well.
You've done good. I don't buy into this. I do like the idea of there's some theory about the Titanic being him being a time traveler,
right?
Because he wins a card game at the top, and he says that he's from a place that doesn't exist.
Right.
So in the year, I think he talks about some lake.
Yeah.
And that lake hasn't been built yet.
Right.
In that year. So there is a theory that he could be a time traveler. So this could tie in all of what you're saying.
Maybe a little bit of taste in there. We can maybe find a time travel movie and throw that in, make it all work. Are you buying into that one?
I'm not buying it. There's too many.
No.
There's three. Yeah.
If someone got excited that it's Leonardo DiCaprio.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think...
We don't need to rate this one, but I'm going to tell you the laziest one that I found on this list. Okay? Yeah,
brilliant.
You'll love it. United 93 and Zero Dark 30. Yeah, of course, mate. That's...
crazy.
That's I'm not buying into it. I'm giving that a one.
No, that's all... That's never all happened. In-house.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Well, with everyone listening, if anyone has some theories... email me at the Big Squid Facebook page, and we can share them. I'll throw them your way in a future podcast, and we'll buy into it or not. But the more elaborate the theory, I reckon the better, don't you think?
Oh, the more elaborate, but then if you've got like these little tiny nuances that just tie them together, I'm about it. And particularly whenever they have, it's because of something, you know, like the Pirates of the Caribbean has one of the camera dudes, but he's wearing a cowboy hat. If you can tie in a theory that pirates and cowboys were together for some reason, I'm on board.
He's ready to go.
Game of Thrones, and there's a Starbucks franchise in Game of Thrones. 100%.
You can probably get Game of Thrones and Fight Club, because Starbucks is in Fight Club. So maybe you can get that together. So if anyone out there has some spare time and can help us out with that, we'll be wrapped.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's start our own theories. This is great.
Oh, man, I love it. Dane, this has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed catching up with you. Where can everyone see your show? Are you going to... This will come out just before the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Oh, nice. Well, I've got my show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
Yep.
Always was, always will be funny.
Right.
It's going to be at the Comedy Republic. I'm there for the first 2 weeks of the festival, so up until about April 9th. And then I think I'm doing a special show on April 10th with just for accessibility.
Right.
So, which will be really rich. Yeah, that'll be at the Town Hall.
Yep.
So, yeah, because I want everyone and anyone to be able to come to the shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, come and check it out. And then I'm always touring around the country, particularly if you're in New South Wales, Queensland. Like, I'm always up and down the East Coast and Victoria. So, yeah, just Google or like the page, my comedy pages, and, yeah, get to one of the shows. Have a bit of a laugh. Be silly and fun.
Yeah, that'll be great. Dane, it's always a pleasure to see you. Pass on my best to your wife. Tell her, please don't pause me while I'm talking on stage to have a crack at my haircut. And I'll see you soon.
I'll see you, my brother.
Thank you to Dane for joining me on today's podcast. Please check out his new show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I also have two shows appearing there very soon. On April 16th, I will be hosting Big Squid Live at the Melbourne Town Hall with guests Celia Pecola and Josh Earl, and we will be competing against each other to create the Great Aussie Movie List. And then on April 17th, my award-winning stand-up show, Little Victories, will appear at the Melbourne Town Hall. And my listeners can access discount tickets by using the promo code PODCAST to save money on their ticket purchases. If you would like to do so, please head to justinhamilton.com.au/gigs and you can find the appropriate links for each show. One-off shows, and then I'm in and out, so if you'd like to catch up, that is the best time to see me. And also over at my site, you can check out the latest Dispatches from the Fury Road blog, where I talk about my confusion about people walking out of movies before they're finished. I still don't understand it. Anyway, the only way I could cope with it is to write a blog about it. So that's all over at justinhamilton.com.au, and as I said, if you want to get those ticket purchases, just add /gigs to justinhamilton.com.au/gigs and you will find the appropriate areas to buy your tickets. Okay. Thank you very much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this chat with Dane. I had a real ball with him. I look forward to catching up with you soon. Until then.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.